In this week, on the 22nd of January 2000, goals from Robbie Earl and Marcus Gale ensured the Dons beat Newcastle United and moved above the Geordies in the Premier League table. Two surveys of the top flight were published in the week that followed. The first found that Wimbledon supporters were the least racist in the division. The other showed the Dons were the team most likely to be harshly treated by match officials. Only 35% of decisions went in their favour compared to 87% for Manchester United. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Hello, we're the same on Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If we win or we lose, we just go.
Hello, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. My name's Matt Cooper, and this evening I'm joined by my friend Niall Cooper. How you doing, Niall?
I'm doing well, Matthew. Thank you.
Excellent. And we're joined by, and I can't get the song out of my head now, Dr. Dr. Adam Proctor. Professor Dr. Adam Proctor. How you doing, Adam? You're okay. You're stressed, aren't you, mate?
I'm busy. I wouldn't call it stress. It's just lots of things to juggle. I am hopefully this week going to be louder than normal. I've tweaked some settings and I'm going to continue to try and be more of the lecturer that I am during the day and enunciate and project in all these things. So I am I'm doing good, because this is like our podcast is a session for me to switch to a completely different mode of thinking, which just involves chatting about the cool stuff that is AFC Wimbledon. And it is cool. I don't care what anyone says anywhere else on the internet.
I'm loving it, Adam. And we're joined by our man with all the football knowledge, the stat guru, 442-5321. It's Tormot Lewis.
I'd love to be. Good evening. I'd love to be able to play 5-3-2-1. We might win some matches, having an extra player on the pitch.
It's the clever tactics. You can just get it in and get it sorted.
Yeah. It's the inverted Christmas tree pyramid formation.
I'm slightly shocked, though, because we appear to have actually signed, even if only on loan, some players that might fit the formation that we actually played in the last game. What's that all about?
I don't know. Well, we'll come on to that in a second. But first, before we start, I would just like to offer an apology. The 9 years podcast, and you know, I happen to like these chaps, even though they're not the biggest fans of fan ownership, but they've accused the whole Same Old Wombles podcast of despising. It's a very strong word. Aussie.
I think they said hate, actually.
No, they said despising. I listened to it back.
Word.
Despising Daniel Aussie. Clearly, that is not the case. I don't despise Aussie. But I don't feel that he did anything to endear himself to the fans. And I'd just like to say that this is nothing to do with his footballing ability or his hair. And I quite liked his hair. It all had to do for me about him not distancing himself from that team. He had an opportunity when he joined to distance himself. He didn't do it. So that is that's my issue. However, I realised that I spoke up and people are thinking that's what all of the podcast people think. Now, it's maybe not what all of us think on this. So I'd just like to offer an apology there. Some people on the podcast might think he offers something and was an asset to the squad. Mark?
He was an asset to the club in that by selling him, we apparently made a profit, which I still can't believe.
Yeah.
But even if he didn't make a profit, we managed to get his wages off the books, which made him an asset to the club. And while he was here, he did score goals, which helped us to gain a point at Huddersfield and 3 points at Blackpool. So, and I think he scored in one of the virtualist games along the way. So that makes him an asset at the time. Now he's back at one of the five poorly players they've re-signed. To the point where they've actually done a social media post about getting the band back together. So good luck to them. Yeah. They're in the division below us. If that means they can thump the franchise whenever they play them, then fine. But other than that, no, Aussie is just a blot on the landscape.
Wow.
Of the rearview mirror.
Wow.
The question is, of course, whether or not, and again, it's just internet rumour, as we record now on a Wednesday night, 21st of January, if we contemplate signing somebody else with Milton Keynes links, I have no idea if that's just complete bullshit, then the whole thing could come up to rear its ugly head again.
Excellent. And I just, yeah.
I want to say in regards to this, I think I said that someone on this podcast was slightly unfair to Orsi, and that, you know, as much as I would have liked him to have distanced himself from that them, I'm not going to say that club, from them, I was like, I'm pretty confident at some point I said we shouldn't be that unfair. I didn't despise him. I just wanted that distance, as Matthew said. And I wanted to see more out of it, and it didn't happen. But that isn't the view necessarily of all of us. And I felt maybe some of us were slightly unfair in our
I think I would love to.
You're
be
bang to
wrong.
Rights, basically, Cooper. That's what we're saying.
No, man. No,
I don't think Matt is alone. Even if that was what Matt thinks, and I haven't asked what Matt thinks, despise is a strong word. That person who I called the donkey rather than the horse throughout this period had a couple of issues with him. One, which was his connection with a club for which I'm still upset that Mark even mentioned the name of the town earlier in this podcast. I might have issues with, and I say might, I completely do have issues with, right? And it just so happens that when a player who had tarnished his entire life reputation, ruined his entire future, probably means he'll never go to heaven and all those sort of other things because he stepped foot wearing that shirt with that crappy badge and all the rest of it in that town that we can't talk about, the Wankel Dome, right, and all the rest of that. But the fact that he was there, and I'm looking for our dear listener at poor Adam, who's basically got his finger over the delete button on a whole load of this. where I'm at with it is what he needed to do is exactly what Matt says. The moment he steps and put on the blue shirt of Wimbledon, there was one thing and only one thing he needed to do, which was to say the other lot are a complete waste of space and do not represent football. Do that, then he's forgiven. That's for me what it was about. His performances on the pitch, which our competitive podcasts have questioned, perfectly legitimate as a different question and a different argument. My concern with the donkey was the fact that he came from that space, that place, and he didn't. And nobody briefed him in the club to say, if you are going to have worn that shirt from that other club, the Wankel Dome, then frankly, you need to make an apology to our fans. And that's where it is.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you. But Mark, you would say, are you happy to have someone in our team who's played for them?
I wasn't happy with it because I was getting grief inside my own house about it. But frankly, I've always loved your family, Mark. Beggars can't be choosers, but you know, anyone who knows my wife, she's a very forthright lady, and I respect her opinions intensely, and don't always agree with them, but respect them certainly. She doesn't have always huge amounts of opinions on football, but Orsi and not being involved in our club was definitely one that she was particularly keen on. As she's also very keen on making sure that we play the ball forward. And actually, curiously, and then I will go on to speak about the defeat against Doncaster.
Very briefly.
But actually, in that respect, she's normally really frustrated as and when we play the ball sideways or backwards. And she just shouts, forwards, 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 forwards. As anyone sitting in a block of the Capistan would know. And she really didn't chant that, didn't shout that, didn't even mention that at all on Saturday, because I think, and between us, we actually agreed, the result was crap. And the chances we created were not brilliant. But actually, as a spectacle, it's easy to criticise because we lost the game. And I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid in any sense saying this, but I think we played a lot better on Saturday than we have in most home games, probably since Wickham, which was obviously the last home game that we won, which I know isn't saying a lot because we lost to Burton and we lost narrowly to Wigan. And these are games we shouldn't have lost against relatively average opposition. And obviously, we had some Darren Neal and draws in there. But I don't know that we were any worse than Doncaster at all. Unfortunately, what happened Saturday was that we huffed and puffed, but we did start with a progressive formation. I don't think we should have started with Stevens, but we started with a progressive formation. And if we'd actually had a little bit more bravery, then we could have got somewhere. I actually applaud the signing of Tilly, so we can obviously
Well, I
we can
mean, Mark,
talk
you're all
about loans
Mark.
already.
I mean, I think the thing. I think you know. We want to talk briefly about Doncaster because I really hate talking about defeats. And there's nothing worse, nothing better than a last minute winner, nothing worse than a last minute defeat. Absolutely dreadful. And I think I'd have take at the end of it. I mean, I know God knows how with 7 minutes injury time they scored in like the 100th minute. For me, it was just they had the better chances. I mean, Bishop had to pull off. I know he dropped the ball at the end, but he had to pull off a couple of amazing saves. There wasn't. We just feel timid. It just feels very timid. We are set up to defend. That's our system is not to let them score. We don't go all out attack. And I get that, but. It's just really frustrating. It means that we have to wait for one perfect opportunity, and that rarely comes. I mean, I don't know how many chances we had in that game. In actual fact, over the last few games, I don't know how many chances we had, but it just feels like we're set up to defend, so we get quite timid. So I don't know, Adam. What do you think, mate?
I mean, it was, yeah. I don't know. I can't, yeah. I thought we were going to be okay. It was quite a stressful game. I mean, I thought we did. I mean, I don't think we played that bad. I thought we deserved the draw, 0-0, obviously. Yeah, I mean, for me, unfortunately, the whole thing for me hangs around the fact that there was. Okay, so there's 6 minutes added on extra time. Lewis gets sent off, which probably adds something on. At the same time, I'm also busting for the toilet, so I leg it out and leg it back in. And yet we
After
play,
Lewis
yeah.
was sent off, we brought Bauer on, which would have added extra time as well.
I thought that wasn't that in the 90 minutes?
Yeah,
Well, this is what I
Lewis
mean.
that
Like,
was it that
yeah,
was it that was in
Lewis
the
was
90
sent
minutes.
off.
So that was
Lewis
in the
was sent
90
off in
minutes.
the 90 minutes.
Yeah, so then they added the extra time on. So that would have taken account of that.
So that's the thing that annoyed me the most was I felt we didn't play great. There wasn't very few chances, annoyingly. I think we should have played Bugle earlier, obviously, for lots of good reasons, not just because he's awesome. And then to have it go on longer than I think it should have gone on, and for them to score that goal at the end due to a nightmare mistake. Was super frustrating. I mean, I blanked a lot of it. I just thought, oh, whatever, you know. I mean, one thing I will say, to be fair, is that obviously Niall's a mad football gods kind of person, right? And of course, we announced the man of the match before the end of the game, which I understand why we do that, because then people know who's upstairs and they might want to go upstairs. And so Bishop is obviously announced as man of the match by the fire door company or whoever it was, so it's like the shut the door thing, and then he makes that mistake, obviously. And I was convinced that that man of the match probably wouldn't happen, that it would be a bit of a nightmare. But to be fair, you know, because someone sent me a clip when I said that, Bishop went to the man of the match and stood there and you know, wasn't apologetic, but we clearly understood the scenario and was great. And I thought that was an amazing character, and I was. Yeah, I think a lot of us, we just left, you know, we just left. Whereas he didn't. He had to go have some team talk and then go upstairs and, you know, be presented with man of the match, but also stand in front of a bunch of fans. So I was massively impressed by that. So I know, and we know none of the players listen to this podcast, obviously, right? But if randomly Bishop ever does, fair play, like, well done, because. You were probably legitimately given man of the match because of those saves you talked about, and just made a mistake at the end during time that I don't think should have been included.
No, I mean it was just, I think it's just incredibly frustrating. But I think what's been good is that over the course of the last few days, we've, as you've said, Mark, we've made these two signings. And Adam, I believe it was you last week who said categorically, if I remember rightly, we won't make any signings in January.
He did, absolutely wrong.
Yeah, I was wrong. I was wrong. I was wrong, and I just didn't think we could do anything. But clearly, I didn't realise we were going to have the backing of course, John Green and the We Are Wimbledon Fund to ensure and help that we get, players over the line. So yeah, I was wrong. And wow, hang on a minute. When have I been right on this
Well,
podcast,
that's a good point, Adam. But Mark, you are implying that there's someone else coming our way.
No, I'm not. I'm just looking at other random internet rumors and thinking if we could have got somebody in, which, as we said, Adam didn't believe we would, but if we could have brought people in by position, we would have wanted a central midfield player, which we've got in the lad from Luton, who, by the way, came on in the game that Niall and I went to at Luton for the last sort of 25 minutes or so. Not that I remember him really. But he's played 20 odd games for Luton this season, started six or seven in the league as well. So he's not completely callow. He won their Young Player of the Season last season as well. So it's not like we're picking up some complete and utter unknown. And somebody of this group said, why are we getting loanees from our own division? But actually, we want to be on the par with Luton, but we're not right now. And actually, Luton are underperforming and still in or around the playoffs. So if it's a choice between somebody who's played in this division this season or someone like the equivalent of Terry Abelardi from Fulham's under-18s, who's never seen a professional game and would get blown over in a light wind, then frankly, I'd rather have, a 20-year-old who wants to really prove themselves overall and actually is getting out there for the first time and playing at another club. Central midfield is what we need at the position. We also, I think, need cover at centre-back because with Lewis's sending off and obviously Harbottle having left as well, then we're short there. And likewise, we said that we need cover at wing back. And actually, Osimhen, for whatever different reason, isn't necessarily pulling up trees right now. So we probably have to play four at the back right now because we haven't got enough appropriate defenders. But equally,
Do you think that, Mark? I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, I think, Bauer obviously comes in. So then you have your three, Bauer, Johnson and Oggs, and then you have Seddon, and I'm arguing Tilly probably comes in and plays at right wing back, and he's done that before. I mean, I think Tilly's an interesting one. Again, there is taking aside the football thing, there is the fact that he was offered a contract with us. He didn't sign it. We don't know how much more he was offered at Wickham, but obviously to go somewhere else is, that's always, again, that's that thing about like, well, we offered you something. We gave you that opportunity. You had a great time with us. You decided to go somewhere else. Feels a bit of a kick in the teeth. And then he's sort of like come back and it's, I'm not sure that he's going to get that sort of hero worshipping that
I agree.
he expects, but
Until he puts one in the top corner from 20 yards.
I think JJ, I think JJ, for JJ, as a footballing decision, as a pure footballing decision, he gets it. It's very easy. He's worked with him before. They know each other. They know how each other works. And Tilly knows what's expected of him, and JJ knows what
This
Tilly can
goes
bring.
back a little bit about exactly what happened with the donkey. And it's just that little bit about a tiny bit of worrying that goes in my head about the naivety that JJ may have about what the club actually means and what it stands for. I liked Tilly as a player last season, but he's got to do something a little bit more about having done and what he was saying and what he did over the summer. And I get it. I just think that I like the idea of having Tilly there, and you're right, you could score a blinder, but it's like an odd choice from a footballing heritage perspective to come back on loan, having only just gone away, and in the way he went, I just think it's a little bit odd. So he's got to do a little bit, just a little bit, to kind of endear himself. I think he probably will, and I think he will do it quickly. But there's just that little bit about, why is he doing that? That's where I come from.
Yeah, I think Mark, I think what you're getting from me and Niall is, I think this is really important, is that we really, really hold grudges. So if you slight us, you know, it's going to take an awful lot to get back in. So I think that's the problem we did. As for Zach, and it was me, I mean, as for Zach, I mean, I think fine, but, you know, it, you know, he's not getting the Luton squad now. So, you know, why is he going to be running into our thing? And don't we need someone with a little bit more experience in midfield rather than a 20-year-old? And if it's going to be a 20-year-old, then why not someone who's, you know, been from a side in the Championship, or, you know, who get tough people in, or someone from the Premier League, whatever. So I just guess I'm slightly underwhelmed. And it feels to me like if that's what, and I don't know how much money John Green's put in, we know what the Wimbledon fund was, but it feels like if all of that money has been gone on those two players, it feels a bit weird.
It's really odd though, because loans often work in the way that the club who's loaning them generally pays a majority of their wages. We should be paying a very small proportion. And the other thing with a loan is that, and this is the one that really pissed me off about the Chelsea one, almost certainly, is that the more they play in your first team, ironically, the less you pay, is normally how a loan works. Because the club that's loaning that player out, the condition of it is that they have to be playing regularly. And that's where you then pay a proportion of the wages. That's normally how it works. So with Zach and with Tilly, right, I think they're going to be good players in that squad. I'd be interested to know how much they're going to be actually being in that first team. I think they're going to be like challenging. I'm not sure they're automatic choices, which is where you would go, Matt. What we want is actually an automatic choice. Personally, for me, I still think there's one spot I want, and that's that big lump up front who can hold the ball. That's the player that I think we're missing.
Oh, 100%, 100%. I think to take Matt's point, though, of course we want more experienced players, but you've actually got to just be realistic to the resource we have and to the level we're getting things from. So, for example, Luton are beefing up their squad by signing, by the sound of it, Casey Palmer, who is surplus to requirements at Hull. So a team pushing for promotion through the playoffs in League One is signing a player on loan who is surplus to requirements for a team pushing for promotion from the Championship into the Premier League, as Hull are, and they're doing quite well right now. So in that regard, we're not at the level of either of those teams. If you look at who other people have signed overall right now, you've got Wigan slightly above us. Wigan have signed Moxon on loan from Stockport, who was on loan in this division as well. Port Vale have signed Ethan Archer. Now, Ethan Archer is an interesting one because he's actually a local boy. Looks like he played for Sutton Common Rovers, Hawley, Bedfont, Whiteleaf, and Wains Park Vale. He's only ever played 50-odd games in League Two for Cheltenham. Luton snapped him up straight away in September, immediately loaned him back to Cheltenham. He scored two goals for Cheltenham, and they recalled him last week, and he's now gone out on loan again to Port Vale. So Port Vale, who are one of our relegation rivals, are signing that level of player, who is attacking midfield, supposedly winger, interesting person. Cheltenham are sad to see him go. He hasn't been pulling up the trees for Cheltenham, who are lower mid-table in League Two. So actually, yep, that's the equivalent, yeah, level of what, I, of what we've,
yeah,
got as well.
I get you. I'm just curious though. I'm just curious because, I mean, in actual fact, ruling out going higher, would it not be interesting to dip into the National League? and look for a hungry player playing sort of like the towards the top of the National League, who wants to get into league football. You know,
I
that's
think
not
the
sometimes it's not
Wimbledon,
sometimes it's not a huge leap.
way though. I mean, like we had successes and we've had failures in that. I think
Yeah.
that's a very Wimbledon way. That's the kind of where Matt Stevens is at, and there's a few others that have been like that. And I get it, having that young and hungry is really good. I think that's either the person we're looking for, in my mind, or we're looking for, a Premier League player that's going to go out on loan. You know, young
That's
Premier
why I
League player.
didn't think
Either
that's why
way,
I didn't
though.
think we'd do any business, because it's like it's really difficult to go both of those ways. That's why I didn't think we'd do any business. So I like the players that we're bringing in. I think Tilly's cool. I think the Zach makes a lot of sense. I think what Niall says about the loan thing is gonna do us a lot of favors financially wise. But yeah, I don't. I just don't see how we can't go up because we can't afford it probably in any capacity. And going down, you have to really have your scouts out there finding that person. And I don't know whether we are quite doing that. I think our scouts stroke are focusing on academy stuff, which I think is fantastic. And obviously we've seen some tweaks to people coming into the academy stuff. You know, Robbo's back. We've got this new person. I think that's great long-term business stuff. So, yeah, it's just a weird window for us at this point for so many reasons.
I think if you look at it as well, if we've brought in Tilly and we've got, a whole bunch of people that are now going to be putting loads of good crosses in because that's what they're good at. The issue we've got goes back to who the hell's going to win that header? You know, at the moment it's not there. You know, and we've talked about this on the pod many a time. Like, we can all go back to the Tom Elliotts and the people you knew who were going to always win the ball in the air. That's the sort of person that we desperately need, because I actually think what we will now have is a whole load of kind of quite fast, nippy players who can feed off a big lump.
Yeah, I
We've
mean,
got that,
I think
but we
I
haven't got the
think
big lump.
no, but I think that is a huge amount of money. I think having any sort of striker like that, because it's obviously not just about holding the ball up, but also about getting in and knocking them in from corners or free kicks or whatever it is. I think it's great. I think that's ideally what I want. And also, I was thinking that really in terms of what we needed in midfield, I wasn't thinking of like an attacking midfielder. I was thinking more of an enforcer, more of someone who's going to break the play up and knock it wide or whatever. And that's kind of what I was that's kind of what I was thinking. And I'm not sure if Zach is that if Zach is that person. And where
If even if
where
he's
does he fit in? Where does he
well,
fit
so
in?
here's a
Sorry,
question:
where does he fit in?
do we think that Smith and Tilly Smith and Reeve deserve to keep their place in the team?
I think it's useful to challenge them, and so this, but I think Zach. I don't know if is does Zach take Reeves' position or does he take Smith's position?
I think Smith take Reeve's position, and arguably Hippolyte could take Smith's position. So actually, your midfield could be Smith and Hippolyte, and one other. If you're playing three in midfield, if you're playing the formation they played against Doncaster, which was just two, again, I think Hippolyte could sit in there alongside Smith, physically taller,
Yep.
and then you possibly got Reeves to be able to hold, to be able to see games out. Then you've got either the new lad Zach from Luton, or you've got Brown in the middle, because Brown in that attacking three was lost on the right. You play Tilly on the right. You can play your man who was on the front cover of the programme on Saturday, Junior and King on the left, in the proper position. So two wingers actually in the positions, but Brown in the 10 rather than anywhere else. So he can't go wandering off to the left wing and just sit there and watch while the ball's crossed into the box and does absolutely fuck all. And then hopefully Bugle, with the remit that he's got at least an hour. If he's carrying a knock, then I agree with Niall anyway. We need to be able to get somebody else in so that you can alternate that, because we've got a lot of Saturday Tuesdays. So you're
Yeah,
not going to be able to consistently play the same 11
well,
match in,
I'm
match out.
intrigued. I agree, but I mean, maybe we've already got that person. Maybe it's Foyo. Maybe Foyo is that person.
Maybe it is for you.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean,
But
that's
obviously, he's not around for another week or so, and he's
no.
and how match fit is he going to be when he comes back?
Well, that's it. I mean, I think that the you know he already JJ already has like games behind closed doors. So I think there'll probably be another one in there. But just to say to the other podcast listening, we like Brown, and we're not transferring our hatred onto anyone else. Our
I like Brown.
despising of someone. Yeah, so I know, but I'm just saying that, you know, like it's not we're not picking anyone else out, to be honest with you.
Brown for me on that score has actually I'm feeling more kind of supportive of Brown over his commitment and his teamwork in recent weeks, even though the results haven't been good. So I'm kind of more supportive of Brown than I have been, but I was never Brown was never in my anywhere near the level of the donkey, because there's no one else in the team that was ever going to be like that. And the
No.
problem with the donkey always was that he never said that thing at the start. That was the
Yeah.
issue.
Anyhow, we won't go back onto that. We're still traumatized by him. So what he didn't say, rather than his hair, which I liked. But just going on to other bits of politics that are running around, and I think this again, this annoys me. And I think it's endemic of this post-truth society that we live in, where people can put up things on social media which say like, none of the players are getting re-signed in the summer. JJ wants out. We haven't got enough money for this, that, and the other. People are having to take pay cuts. We're having to sell all of the metal, all the lead on the roof to try and get some more money in. We're actually loaning out the halfway to the linesmen have to pay to actually sit on the grass. Do you know what I mean? It's just like
Which of
you
those
could.
is actually in any way true?
I know exactly. Well, no, I mean, it's just like it's a load of baloney. So it's like we can. It's just like people can put these things in, stir it up, and then what they you put these things in, and then at the bottom of it, you put hashtag sell up. It's just like
I
that's
mean,
what it is.
I love the fact that people are calling these leaks. Like, it's not a, no, you can literally write anything you want onto social media, X, whatever. That's not a leak. You literally can just type into your computer what you want to say. Ah,
It's
it's not a leak.
no, it's leaking out of your mouth, I think is what it is. It's leaking out of your brain and through your mouth onto the
There's no
Xbox.
insider info in, and it's just, I don't know what's been going on. I mean, I'm not been as close to this as some of people. Well, of course, I've seen screenshots or whatever of whatever. It's just like, for goodness sake, like I don't know. I want to start creating some fake news. I'm trying to work out what fake news I want
Don't go creating fake news. It is just the
to.
wrong attitude.
What
When
about if I put
it comes
1 million
to the
pounds
leaks,
from fans have just arrived?
yeah, but that's fake
I could
news as
put
well.
that. Yeah, I could just put one. Fans have given 1 million pounds. I heard.
What frustrates me personally is, and I said at the top of the pod, you know, I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid on this one. We're in a relegation scrap. We're going to be in a relegation scrap probably right until the end, and hopefully we'll come out the right side of it. However, I don't personally think that we'll go down. I also don't personally see that it is positive and is going to make anyone feel anything other than negative to put out whatever stuff has been put out. And then challenge, so to speak, whoever it may be, the club, appropriate officials, the Don Trust board, or anyone else, to be able to refute said potential fake news. Because there's enough stuff floating around anyway. Actually, what we need is a squad on the pitch which we know can be good enough. We know they can be good enough because they proved this season they can be good enough. They need to be able to show they can be good enough. Are they playing enough attacking football right now? No. Have we had a run of consistent games where we made a consistent number of chances and therefore scored a consistent number of goals? No. That's the basic first bit of building blocks that we need to be able to do. I mean, there are people obviously who never were particularly jazzed about Jackson, full stop. And this is just another excuse. If your glass is almost half empty, then you will instantly go back to, well, I never thought it was good enough anyway. I don't care that it'll cost whatever it'll cost to sack him. There may be a time when it's not necessarily wise to have the current coaching staff coaching the team because they're not really able to get a tune out of the team. I don't think that time is now anyway, because we've seen that we can get some results. We've seen in different competitions we've got results. We've seen young players being given opportunities, and we've seen that even the defeats, with the exception of Peterborough and Bolton, all season for the 26, 27, 28 games we played, have not been comprehensive. We're not getting beaten week in, week out by anyone. So actually, to me, that says
We are getting
we're not
beaten, but
far
we're not
off.
getting thrashed.
Yeah,
That's it.
exactly. Yeah.
I think the other thing to say is we are in a relegation battle, but that means there's a lot of other sides down there who are also losing points, who are below us.
And we're on a
so
pretty
we can
shocking
blame it.
run, though.
Yeah, I mean we are, but the point I'm trying to make is that there are lots of teams out there who have wealthy owners. And they're below
Yeah,
us. They're
but this is.
below us in this league, they're below us in League Two, and they're below us in the National League. So, what we can, I mean, I think that fan ownership is the easiest thing to beat us with. Always the easiest thing it's the easiest thing to knock us with. And so
Surprise. I
that's
mean,
what happens.
the thing is, surprise, surprise. We're not doing very well on the pitch, and suddenly all these kind of rumours, which I'm going to call fake news, come out wherever across the fan base to basically put the fear into, I don't know. I don't know what they're trying to achieve. But it's we're not doing very well on the Saturday game, so suddenly there's all this stuff. Whereas the facts that we need to understand is the accounts, which we are really good at publishing. And we are really good at being as open as possible, which do indicate losses to a certain degree. And that there are stakeholders, whether that's John Green and others, who are putting money in because they want to appropriately to support the club. They're completely separate bits of the puzzle. And it's so frustrating that as soon as we're not doing very well on a Saturday, that for whatever reason, and whether they think they have information or not, we get nonsense about what may not be happening. And again, there is no way I'm asking the John's Trust board to refute basically fake news. That's just inappropriate.
Yeah, no, I mean it's very frustrating. My understanding, I believe that the DTB are talking to a range of different people. And it which is, you know, which is and it and some of those opportunities, if they come to fruition, sound really exciting. You can't publish that or, go down the line of saying who it is, how much it is, and what could happen. All that sort of stuff, because there's a whole load of confidentiality, there's competition, all that sort of things. You have to keep these things quiet. So we have to trust that they're doing it. I genuinely trust that they are. Now, maybe the DTB needs to come out every now and again. And I think, comms is always a thing, but it could come out every now and again saying, we are doing this. These are the conversations that are happening. We're trying our best. I think that sort of information coming out from the DTB is quite good. And it's, rather than coming out all the time going, our financial situation is a mess. They can say financial situation is a mess. We are doing this, and we hope to have some news over the coming months.
I know I was going to say before, because Niall will have a load more info on this, right? But I was going to say, I don't think they're trying their best. I think the Don's Trust Board are doing their best in a very difficult scenario that is English football. And I think I think it is totally inappropriate for people who are fans of our club to post information that has no verified sources, that is not clear, and I actually think that is damaging to investors, whether they want those investors to buy every percentage of the club or not. And actually, by saying that kind of stuff, you're doing a disservice to the potential for any type of investor, even if you want that investor to own 100%. So unfortunately, don't do that stuff because it's just stupid. It's not, you know, it's just not worth it.
And
I might edit myself out.
And there we, no, Adam, you keep yourself in there, my friend. No, that's for just picking up this, and I'm going to use the word briefly. What's the latest? There seems to be some rumblings around the football governance and parachute payments.
All right, so there's a couple of big things. Big thing that's happened today was the state of the game consultations out. So those of you who don't know, very simply, is the independent regulator now has oversight over the football's broadcasting distribution deal, which is worth £3.2 billion a year and basically helps a load of other clubs to some degree. And we get something like £700,000 a year out of it or something. Now, the distribution deal in the future must address the findings found out in the State of the Game report. Now, the State of the Game report will look, and we're really welcome, Fair Game massively welcomes this, parachute payments will come into that, along with the amount of money that's given to each division. So the actual flow of where the money goes from that £3.2 billion will dramatically change. So almost inevitably, there will be more money available to clubs lower down the pyramid. That's almost certainly going to happen. The conversation that we're having at Fair Game with a number of people, and I feel like I'm the DTB board on some of this here, can't necessarily reveal exactly who, but there are some interesting senior figures in the world of football that we're talking to that are looking at how that money is distributed. And what we're looking at is four pots, which is core funding pot, which means every club gets the money for the 13 roles that the EFL say must happen and some money for ground maintenance. So every club gets that. It basically means it's the money to make sure you can turn the lights on and there's somebody in the ground to turn the lights on. Then you have ring-fenced reward funding. Both of those, this is where it becomes important for AFC Wimbledon, is that's dependent on your financial sustainability. So if you're a numpty club or a club that spends more on players' wages than getting revenue, then you wouldn't get cash from that. So all those clubs who are dependent on owner benefactors wouldn't be, it doesn't make any sense. Why would you get extra money? So the money would go to the clubs who are trying to be sustainable within their, where they are, and they're the ones who get money. So clubs like ourselves, who are financially sustainable, will get money, and you wouldn't give money to clubs who aren't financially sustainable. That's one of the big arguments that's always come through, actually, from the Premier League, who have always said, why would we give more money down the pyramid if they're just going to piss it up the wall because they're being financially unsustainable? That's the conversations that are happening. So if we can get to a position where we persuade one of those proposals on how that £3.2 billion is drawn up in the future, then we're in a situation where it totally changes the future for our club. Because we're battling against clubs that aren't financially sustainable.
I think that's it. No, and you know, we all want this and it's exciting. I guess the big question is there a timetable? I mean, when could we see that sort of thing actually happen?
Well, the State of the Game report is going to be published, the first version of it, within a year. And then the distribution deal has to fit in. Now, before then, either the EFL or the Premier League could put a proposal forward and then the regulator would have to say whether they think it's fine or not. What we're looking to do is build a momentum of politicians. And I was in Westminster today, I was in Westminster yesterday, talking to a whole load of politicians about trying to get them to buy into this. And every single politician I spoke to was straight going, this is a great idea, let's do it. And they were in...
Well, even Lee Anderson?
I didn't speak to Lee Anderson.
Can you imagine Niall talking to Lee Anderson? Niall and the reformer are an absolute obvious bedfellow.
Yeah, yeah. It was out with the reform people. They were bang up for it.
Look, shall we just leave that to some other podcasts? But like, let's not do it for us. I did have to. If you want to grab me a drink or whatever, and you know it'd be a got a lemonade, a Sprite at the ground, then I can tell you about my experiences recently in Parliament, in going to the parliamentary bar and all the rest of it. But that's a different thing. The MPs I actually went and met were all very supportive. And in the case, two cases, both of them were on the case to clubs within their constituency or clubs they've got connections with, saying this is what we need to back.
So Niall, would you Niall, with that, when with all of that said, would you suggest there is cross-party support for all the things the football governance regulator wants to do?
Right. Yes. But what the regulator actually wants to do and how it's going to do it isn't defined yet. Because what you've got is you've got a situation where a bill went through that was in some places vague, deliberately so, because that's what happens with any government bill. And it's up to the regulator to then translate what that actually means, which is why they've gone out for massive consultations to say, well, what does that actually mean? So we're looking like, I've got two screens open, and there's another screen which says state of the game consultation. And that's what, that's my bedtime reading for the next couple of nights. And then with all the kind of researchers and the clubs, we'll go through that and make some suggestions about what exactly that looks like. It may actually be a wonderful document. I haven't even turned the first page on it yet. But I will be, and I'll be looking at that, and then we'll be making comments.
But realistically, that looks like the financial benefit to AS Wimbledon or to any other League One, League Two club wouldn't come in until, by the sound of it, the start of the 27-28 season, maybe even one
Yeah,
after
at
that.
the earliest.
27-28. Though it could be moved faster if the EFL and the Premier League were to put forward a proposal that the regulator agreed before the State of the Game report comes in, which is where, if all parties suddenly were happy and agreeing, so the EFL, the Premier League, and the regulator, then it could happen faster, which is where what we want to do is get to a position where there is a whole range of people and organisations that back the fair game proposal, because if we can get to that point and it's adopted by either of those two, then we're in a winning situation. So that's the lobbying bit that I've been going off gallivanting into Parliament and talking to a whole load of people and talking to a load of clubs along with the rest of the fair game team to try and get that over the line. Because we've spent like 6 months or so going through a whole load of research to create the finance paper that we've got now. What we want to do is make sure that that is robust enough to get the support from those organisations and those clubs and those as many as we possibly can on that. So they're all signing up. So this isn't just a fair game document, it's a document backed by X, Y, and Z.
Okay, cool. Well, now we'll keep knocking at the door and getting you to give us some updates. It feels like it's a way away. I think that's always another thing that we're going to get hit by. But anyhow, let's move on to just some other little bits of news. What's it called? Anyhow, things in the window, something like that. So the first thing, Niall, I think you've got a message from our good friend Mickey Haswell. Big shout out to Mickey Haswell. Sorry, Mark, I had to get in there. He wants, because they're doing their bike ride, aren't they, from Plough Lane to Stevenage on the 14th of March to raise some funds for the foundation. So if you're a cyclist, crazy enough to cycle all that way, log into their onto the foundation site and join Mickey Haswell or donate, which would be fantastic as well, because the foundation we know do some brilliant work. Other little bit of news, which is quite fun. John Scales' daughter is now in the women's team, who won in the cup, I think, won a cup game the weekend just gone, which is fantastic.
They won 5-1. It wasn't just a little, scraped.
And I see on socials he's gone, such a proud day to see Willow make such a positive impact in her AFC Wimbledon debut. Which is says AFC Wimbledon is a special club and epitomises the values of excellence and community. I love seeing her an integral part. So, which is fantastic. So that's
Friend of the
great.
pod, clear friend of the pod, John Scales.
Friend of the pod. And you were saying, Mark, we were just thinking, are there any generations that have played one, you know, paper four. So Scales and his daughter. But we can't think of any off the top of our head. We are sure that there's a listener out there, or we can contact Bert, Ray, Steve Crabtree, Gary Jordan. One of these guys are going to know. Anybody from Wish, they're
going to
know.
Well, I do remember reading that Ollie Palmer claimed his granddad had played, but although we are the same old Wombles, we're not quite that old. but obviously we are old enough, and the 88, obviously Scales is part of that 88 group. I'm looking at, you know, my photos I've got here at home of the 88 group, and they will all now be in their 50s, I guess. So it's quite feasible middle age.
Early middle age.
Absolutely. I mean, I guess Willow, for example, as John Scales, one of John Scales' daughters, probably a sixth one or something like that, approximately age-wise. So those people will be coming in. And naturally, if you've got the appropriate genes, you know, there's enough young actors and actresses coming through who are children of actors that we're very familiar with from the 80s. So that apart from making us all feel old, then that's all quite interesting to observe.
So we're looking for some Nepo children, yeah?
Nepo footballers, whatever the appropriate term is.
Yeah. That's like almost how you do with, like, kind of race horses, almost. Like, that's what you're basically talking about. All we need is some good breeding to get the, you know, so what we're basically after is sort of, I don't know, Eddie Reynolds' granddaughter to marry John Fashanu's whatever, and then the offspring of that is what we want. Is something like that.
So that's right. So anyhow, we're just about to introduce a eugenics program.
Yeah, so I was going to say, please do not go down this
The one example I can give you is Preston Kidwell. So Preston Kidwell is one of Danny Kidwell's sons. And obviously, Danny Kidwell, as we know, former Wimbledon captain, scored that penalty in Manchester to get us back into the league. Preston is in our under-18 setup, who are doing very well under Simon Clark, actually. They're probably the success story on the pitch of any of the teams wearing the AFC Wimbledon shirt this season. They're definitely worth checking out. And, Preston is in that group. I don't know whether therefore, he's in the first year of that or the second year of that and would potentially qualify for a professional contract this summer. But good luck to him, because that clearly could be second generation. And I'm sure he'd be given, you know, he has to be good enough. There's no point in giving someone favourable treatment just because of who their father is or who their mother is. But if he is good enough, then I'm sure the fans would give him certainly every opportunity.
I say, and talking of the younger teams, we're actually in, we're recording this on Wednesday, and we're in London Senior Cup action this evening. I believe we're away, a team beginning with W.
And Woodford Town,
thank you. We don't know what the score is at the moment. I'm assuming it's 0-0. It goes to penalties. And I'm not sure what the next round is. The London Senior Cup just keeps on giving. It's got like 100 rounds of London Senior Cup. Anyhow, that's on this evening. We've found out our next opposition in the EFL Trophy. We're playing Northampton Town, and that's going to be on the quarterfinals at Plough Lane. 10th of February. Tickets available for a fiver. So, Mark, how many tickets are you getting? I can't remember, because you love this. This is one of your things, isn't it?
It's one of your things to keep on mentioning it, but yes.
I got it, yeah. So, that's all happening. And I think I just want to end on this one thing. It's quite interesting. An interview with Ivor Heller that was on a BBC World Service. I thought was quite interesting. I don't know if you've listened to it.
I listened to it this morning, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. He's an ambassador for our club. So it's on a program called Outlook. And you can go back and have a look on it. It's got on the iPlayer. I think he is that. He has an ambassador, and you know, it is an interesting story. He's gone through an awful lot, and a wonderful, excitable thing. I mean, I think It's just, it's brilliant. So it's a great thing to, it's a good thing to listen to. And I'm sure that there's more that he wants to say, because I, you know, at the start of our reformation as AFC Wimbledon is an incredible story with some wonderful people who did a huge amount of work. And, you know, Ivor was a big part of that.
Absolutely. Ivor's obviously a big personality, and he comes across very well on the World Service. You can get on BBC Sounds, for anyone who has the BBC Sounds app. Tells some great stories, obviously mentioning, you know, the likes of Chris Stewart and Mark Jones and Trevor, who were obviously involved with the foundation of the club. And it's great to have that profile out there. I can give you, by the way, if you want one, a live update on the Woodford Town FC against AFC Wimbledon, whoever they are, under-18s.
We're excited about updates, but only if they're positive.
Oh, of course they are. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Right. 45 minutes played, and Dwayne Campbell, who I believe is part of the under 19 setup, has just scored a penalty to give us an equaliser. So it's 1-1, 1-1 at half time, basically.
Okay.
That's not right. That positive. That's positive in the sense you're telling us live and we have scored. Yeah. But I was expecting to make it 2-0 or 3-0 or something like that. Not to make it.
That wasn't actually that positive, was it?
Well, really? We were losing, so yes, it was positive because we're now not losing.
I think in the current
I
think in the current situation we'll take anything, really. So,
is this the quarter final, by the way?
We've got no idea what this is.
No idea.
We don't know. It could be whatever round it is now. I think there's a million rounds of this. I think it's the longest running competition. Anyhow, chaps. Well, that's.
I'm just wondering whether we go to that final. We go to that final and that and the virtual,
third round. This is. It's the third round.
Yes, which could be the quarterfinals. Anyhow, chaps. Yeah, any final. We've just got to get to any final. That's what we need. That's what we need to do.
Does it involve cash? Then I'm up for it. Yeah, there's no cash. Forget it.
That's how we roll.
Such a mercenary.
Yeah, mercenary competition.
I love the fact Woodford Town are trying to claim this game as David against Goliath, considering even the most devoted AFC Wimbledon fans would have struggled to have heard of any of the players that we have in our team.
That's brilliant. Anyhow, chats. Thank you very much for this evening. Thank you very much, my friend Al Cooper. Dr. Adam Proctor. And
you know how old that song is? That's 1984, that song.
From Mark Lewis,
just look it up.
Almost as old as us.
Thank you, Mr. Matthew Cooper. Almost as old as us. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see you guys next week. We're the same old Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth.